Amen, and thank you, Linda. I am so happy to be here. CareNet Conference is my favorite week of the year because I get to meet so many of you and get to hear your stories and hopefully help you with questions and so on and so forth. I just love what we do through our ministries and the way we're able to meet women where they are and walk alongside them and support them and offer practical help and information and so on. What we do is the best. So I'm hopeful that I'll be able to share some things with you today that will make you feel more effective and actually be more effective in both training your volunteers and in meeting with clients yourself. How many of you are EDs? Okay, how many of you are client service directors? How many of you are board members? Welcome. We have one token board member. I'm glad you're here. How many of you are volunteers? Nurse managers or sonographers? Okay, what am I missing? How could I forget that? Abortion recovery? And sexual education people. Okay, so did I forget anybody now? All right, well, welcome, welcome, welcome. I wanted to start today with just a little reminder about what it is that we do and why we do it. Shortly before conference last year, I received a phone call from a young friend of mine. My other passion in life has become foreign missions work, and she goes to Thailand with me every year where we reach out to prostitutes and offer them the Lord as well as a new life. And so she'd been coming with me for a long time, and she called to tell me that she was pregnant as the result of a date rape. She did think about abortion briefly because she felt so caught and stunned and all the rest of it, but I had directed her to go to her local pregnancy care center, which was in a state that is not mine and not one that we're in. And she sat and told the director her story, and the director was the founding director who had been there for over 25 years. And as they chatted, the director said, "What is your name again?" So my friend told her her name, and the director said, the client had already given her the information that her own mother had been a client at the pregnancy center. So the director looked at her and said, "Your mother was my very first client. I placed my hands on her belly and prayed for you before you were born. I held you in my arms and prayed for you when you were an infant. I had the privilege of praying for you repeatedly when you were a little one and a toddler." And now the circle had come all the way around, and my friend found herself at the very same place that her mother had gone to give her life. And this is why we do what we do. God redeemed the mother, and she became one of his children. And now the daughter, who had been prayed for so many times, walks with the Lord. The Lord met her in the middle of her crisis last year, and again, through the pregnancy center. And so what we do has long-lasting generational implication. And so I want to encourage you that our work is not in vain, that it's important work, and that it will impact the future of our families and our country. Okay, little disclaimer. There are those in the psychological world who don't believe in this whole left brain, right brain thing. They think that we're making a false dichotomy and that the brain is the brain and that it all works together, and there's a lot of truth to that. At the same time, there is some research that different parts of the brain function differently. So, with that in mind, we're going to talk about the possibility that different parts of the brain function differently and that we need to engage all of the brain when we are working with somebody and trying to help somebody. So this is a cute little drawing about the different sides of the brain. The white right brain is where we have most of our emotional life. We call it the limbic system when we talk about the emotional center of the brain. The left brain is where we do the more concrete thinking, where we would do math and science and balance our checkbook and all those fun things. Now, all of us have to use both sides of our brain all the time. Because even if you're an artist, you still have to balance your checkbook, right? At least you should. And if you don't, you've probably found yourself in trouble a few times. I guess I shouldn't even say checkbook. I should talk about your bank account online. I'm obviously a little old school. So let's just say that as a starting point. We all use both sides of our brain all the time, but most of us use one side a little bit more than the other. We're more comfortable in one side. We're more comfortable with that area of our thinking and doing. Children, by and large, are right brain creatures. And you see these children who have done a lovely job of painting the bathroom tile. They were operating out of their right side. They thought, oh, this would be fun, this would be pretty, this would be an adventure, not looking at consequences. And you see the look on the face of the older one when mom walked in, right? The little one still doesn't get it. He's still having a great artistic experience and not understanding. But the older one knew full well when mom walked in that there were consequences to this behavior and that she was probably going to experience them and that it wasn't as much fun as her right brain told her it might be. So let's break this down a little bit more. In the right hemisphere, the right side of your brain, which controls which side of the body, by the way? Okay, so if you have a stroke in the right side of your brain, you may have some numbness or paralytic problems on the left side of your body. But in terms of what's happening in the brain itself, the right hemisphere gives us sensory information. So that's kind of where you process what you see, what you feel, what you hear. Tactile things. This is spatial abilities, how you put the world together. So when you look at the picture, what do you see? I see walls and I see a lot of people, so I'm putting that together in a spatial way. This also has all emotion, but negative emotion especially. And this is the whole picture type thing. The left hemisphere also gives us some sensory information to process. It is responsible somewhat for our verbal abilities, positive emotion, and our analytical processing. So it's the left side, again, that helps us to balance our bank accounts and so forth. Okay. What do you see? Is she twirling in a clockwise or a counterclockwise manner? Say that louder. Counter, she says. She is a left brain thinker. I can't even see counterclockwise. I've looked at this and looked at this and looked at this. I cannot see it. Okay, so if you're seeing her spin clockwise, you're a right brain person, which I apparently am as well. Can you see the clockwise at all? She cannot see the clockwise. You see what?
When you first put it up, I saw a counter, but now I see clockwise.
Okay, she first saw counterclockwise, but now she can see the clock. Okay, you too. You folks probably operate pretty equally on, with both sides of your brain, which There are right brain people, left brain people, and both brain people. According to the quizzes, I come out as both brain. And by the way, if you're interested in this, you can go online and there's all these online quizzes and they'll score them for you and give you an answer. I tried to find one that I could hand out on a good old-fashioned piece of paper and we could do together, but they were all online. So according to this, I'm right brain. According to the quizzes, I'm both brain. And so you may find different answers depending on what you look at as your assessment tool. I just cannot see the counterclockwise. Okay, tell me what you see in this picture. What's the story? Who's doing what? The girl's hugging the guy. She sees both. She said, oh, my word, that's wild. I think there's a lot of truth to it being wild, because depending on whether you're a big picture right person or a more analytical left brain person is going to determine how you see this picture. Okay? And, well, it's really the guy reading the paper. Those of us who are right brain probably didn't see it that way until we stopped and made our left brain engage and really look at it. So all this to say that our brain dominance determines how we see an optical illusion. This is the famous optical illusion picture where some of you, what do you see? Okay, tell me what both is. Who sees what? A young woman or an old woman, okay? When you first look at it, what did you see? Isn't that funny? It took me forever to find a young woman. Forever. I finally did, but I saw the old woman. So is anybody not able to see them both? You can't see the old woman. Okay, here's the old woman's chin and mouth and nose. Does that help? Okay. Where's the young woman? Here's her eyelash, nose, and chin. Does that help? Did you get it? Anybody still not getting it? It's okay if you don't. Okay. You don't get the young woman? Okay, here's her hair. And a feather in her cap, I guess. Forehead, eyelashes, nose, and chin. Ear. You got it now? Okay. All right. So, once again, how your brain organizes itself determines how you see things like optical illusions and ambiguity, not only in pictures, but in life in general. How you deal with ambiguity is determined in large part by which side of your brain is functioning the best at that moment. Are our clients dealing with ambiguity? Maybe just a little. Okay, so here are some pregnancy center workers in Ecuador, actually. I also volunteer for Life International. Which side of the brain are they using right now? The left. They're busy working on the books. You can tell that they're doing structured, analytical, whatever. As opposed to in the counseling room, a large part of what we're doing, whether we know it or not, is right brain activity. And we will work on that. Okay, so what is this birthing or laboring woman doing? Which side of her brain is dominant? Right. This is something that I hope you can really get out of here today. We are doing left brain teaching and education for right brain experiences. Perhaps that may be where we fall apart a little bit. Same thing when we try to go into a high school classroom and we just talk about STDs or we talk about don't drive drunk. We're not, both of those are right brain experiences and we're trying to address them from a left brain standpoint. So we've got to figure out ways that we can engage the right brain for these right brain experiences, because even from the moment that she thinks she might be pregnant, her right brain is trying to deal with this. If you've heard me do training before, you have heard me say that I am convinced that God created an instinct or intuition or something in women that predisposes them to motherhood. And so virtually every client on the block, when she thinks she might be pregnant, has this right brain moment. And her right brain just floods her with wonder and awe and joy and excitement. But for our clients, what happens is the left brain takes over so fast that she loses touch with that. So for her, oh no, I can't be pregnant. I can't be pregnant. I can't be pregnant. My boyfriend will leave. How am I going to finish college? How will I ever be the doctor I want to be? See how her analytical brain has started to override her right brain experience. And so what we want to do in the counseling room with the ultrasound, and by the way, this is why ultrasounds can be so effective, because we're engaging that right brain from every which way when she sees the picture of her baby and when she hears that beating heart. That even without ultrasound, we can engage the right brain so that we can take her back to that place of a baby. Okay? Another example of how this is right brain. This is in Maui, Hawaii, where God has several vacation homes, I'm pretty sure. He lives in California, but he has vacation homes in Hawaii. You come visit me and I'll show you why I say that. Not where I live, but up the coast. This is called the birthing stone. And you see this is naturally carved kind of seat. And the Hawaiian princesses of days gone by used to birth all their babies there because it was believed that the waters had healing powers and divine powers and protective powers and so on and so forth. But the whole thing was very right brain, very instinctive, that they spied the shape of this and determined that the gods had set that up for them for their protection and so on and so forth. So again, pregnancy, birth, right brain experience. And another example. There was a very famous story in the late 1970s, I am old, of a gorilla in an Ohio zoo, and I'm going to get the details slightly wrong here, but she had been raised in captivity, and when she had her baby, she didn't know what to do with it. She didn't know how to breastfeed. She'd never witnessed it before. She didn't know how to care for her baby, groom her baby, all the things that she was supposed to do. So the baby died very quickly. So when she became pregnant again, seemingly she figured that one out, or he did. When she became pregnant again, they invited a bunch of La Leche League leaders to come to the zoo every day and sit in front of her cage and nurse their babies and tend to their babies and do maternal behavior modeling. So when this baby came, the La Leche League leaders kept coming, after the baby was born. And so they kind of had this little La Leche League meeting that included the gorilla mom, and she did a beautiful job with the next baby because her right brain was engaged through modeling. See, these La Leche League leaders couldn't give her a handout of information. They couldn't teach a class on how to care for your baby. They couldn't do any of that. But what they could do was engage her right brain through role modeling. That's a very powerful way of engaging the right brain. Unfortunately, though, we don't have that particular one available to us during the pregnancy decision time. We do later when we're doing parenting, teaching, and all of that stuff. But okay, I want you to look at this and tell me just exactly how you would describe this picture to your friend who has been blind from birth. Who's got an idea? Yes.
The sky looks like how you feel, and you smell a cool breeze, and you get a hug at the same time.
Oh, the sky looks like how you feel when you get a cool breeze and a hug at the same time. Do you know somebody who's blind? I figured you must. I have a good friend who's been blind since she was an infant, so. That was beautiful. I love it. What else? Oh, wait, when she did that, which side of the brain was she engaging for our blind friend? The right, definitely. Definitely. Okay, who else has an idea? Okay, the sky looks the way a cotton ball feels. Again, right brain experience for her. Anything else? I notice you're, yes. Oh, I was just going to say, I notice you haven't mentioned color, and she said the sky looks the way orange smells. Oh, you guys are good. That's wonderful. Okay, now I want to try one more thing, if my computer works right. And it didn't. Wait a minute. Maybe I have to. Can you hear that? Can you hear? Okay. How would you describe this to your deaf friend? Yes. Oh, sounds like new beginnings. What else? Yes. Sounds like you're rocking back and forth. Any of you seen Mr. Holland's Opus? Okay, how would you describe this in a way that they might be able to feel with their hands or their body? These are great, by the way. Dancing and swaying. It reminds me of being stroked. You know, your head or your body, a nice massage, something like that. So, all of this to say that even with people who have deficits, sorry, I'd love to keep playing that. I love that piece. Even those who have deficits can be helped with right brain explanations. Okay, our clients often come to us with some kind of deficits, social deficits, emotional, certainly spiritual, and so forth. So we can help to engage those places that may not be functioning as well as we'd like. So to increase right brain learning, we want to do patterning, and I'll come back to that in just a minute. Metaphors. What's a metaphor? Something is something else. Yes. So often it's a story or a phrase that's used to demonstrate a truth, right? So we turn a left brain the truth into something right brain. Algebra tends to do this a lot, and I cannot tell you how much I can't stand math and can't do math, but when we have the whole train going 50 miles an hour, all that stuff that I still don't get, that's trying to take a left brain truth and put it into a right brain metaphor. Okay, and analogies, the same thing. Analogies all break down, but they can be very, very useful and helpful, especially in engaging the right brain. Then we've got role playing, which, again, probably, well, when can you imagine that being helpful in the pregnancy decision making venue? How to talk to your significant people. So boyfriend, mom, husband, father, significant people, how to tell them that you are choosing life and that you want their support and things like that. How to tell them you're pregnant. Visuals, of course, this is why we have fetal models. This is why we have the lovely pictures that we've gotten before you decide with the baby growing in the womb. This is why we show STD pictures in high school presentations. This is why a lot of schools will show drunk driving pictures and pretty awful pictures. They're trying to engage that right brain rather than just have the left one going on. And movement also, helping her to experience what's going on with her. And that, again, is part of the beauty of the ultrasound, the movement of the beating heart, the sound of it, the way it looks when she experiences it, all right brain experiences. So let's go back to patterning. Are any of you dancers of any kind? Okay, my friend in the teal, Karenette Colors, when you were learning to dance, how did you go about it? Did you read a book? Had to watch your instructor, then what?
I had to try it.
Had to try it, then what?
I had to listen to her critiques and try to do what she wanted.
Okay, when she was critiquing you, was that left or right brain?
Right. Like, you know, my posture needed to be as if there was a string through the middle of my body.
Oh, okay. So I would say it was left brain teaching that used right brain experience. The string is very helpful, isn't it? That's a metaphor. She doesn't have a string growing out of her head. Okay? So then what was the last thing you had to do? Practice, practice, practice. Okay, that's what we call patterning. And so when we're helping her with parenting skills, that's easy. We can have her practice putting diapers on before the baby comes and all that good stuff. Again, though, things like patterning are more difficult in the counseling room, but can be used effectively in sex ed or abstinence teaching, can be used very effectively by the games that we use, which also include analogies and metaphors and so on and so forth. One of the things I love the most about our PACE, post-abortion counseling and education program, for those who might be new. How many of you are new, by the way? Less than a year. Oh, bless you, my children, and welcome. One of the things I love about PACE is it employs all of this. I just finished helping facilitate a PACE weekend for somebody. And the use of all of these things as we go through what God might have for her healing process is really pretty amazing. Linda's left the room, but when she wrote this Bible study, she had no idea, hardly, what she was doing, and yet was able to be very effective. Here's another thing that's important. Right brain learning, especially for women, but also for men. Right brain learning is virtually always better in groups. So, let's go back to our dancer friend. Do you think you learned to dance better when you were home alone practicing or when you were in studio with either an instructor or a partner or both? In studio, of course. And many of the, part of the reason for our existence is because the woman who finds herself in this difficult pregnancy situation feels so very isolated and alone. And so we come alongside her and we can help her to learn about good choices much better than she could alone. Part of the reason I love training face-to-face so much is because I think we learn better than we do online, or we learn better than we do by reading a book. There are certainly exceptions to that, but most of us will not only learn better, but experience something from the Lord more easily when we're in a group. So we talked a little bit about whole brain people. When we do things like share a meal with somebody, we have to engage both parts of the brain, don't we? We have to have that left brain going to figure out what to eat, how to use our table manners, not to kick people under the table, sometimes to share information. Maybe we're going to talk about politics. Heavens. And try to convince the other person. All of those are left brain things. At the same time, sharing a meal is right brain. If you've ever heard me speak before, you know I'm a fan of oxytocin, which is a chemical that your body releases for bonding. And one of the times that we release oxytocin in our lives is when we share a meal together. Perhaps God knew something when he set things up like communion and meal fellowship and hospitality and all the rest of it. So oxytocin releases, and that bonding that happens in relationship is all right brain. So there are many times in life when both sides are really highly engaged. However, let's say you and your spouse, or you and your board member, are having a discussion about money. It may start out very nice and structured, and here's the facts, here it is on paper, here's my report for the month, and you can see we're starting to bleed a little bit. And somehow, you don't know how it happens, somehow in 5 minutes everybody's mad. Okay, here's something to know. Especially for men, but of course women do it too, lots of it. Once we reach a certain level of being angry, frustrated, scared, whatever, our left brain shuts down. We can't think anymore. So you can keep arguing for an hour, which many of us do. And what is the end result after an hour? Nothing is solved, is it? Doesn't it usually work better if we can each go to our separate corners and pray about it and think about it and calm ourselves and then come back and try to have a discussion? Okay? So, in order to protect your marriages and your board and director relationships, I really hope that you will try to bear that in mind as you go along. Okay, so we talked about group learning. This is English learning in Thailand with the work I told you about. And we're all studying together. And we start as a group learning English words. And we use games and we use songs. Last year when I was there, they were doing English body parts. So we did head and shoulders, knees and toes, which was fine when we started the slow version. They kept up. But, oh, those poor girls when we got to doing it quickly. But they had a great time. So they released a lot of oxytocin. They were laughing. They were relating to each other and so forth. So we took the left brain learning of vocabulary and made it a right brain experience so that it would be easier for them to grasp. The modern American birth experience, the modern American pregnancy experience is virtually all left brain. We've somehow moved it into a political argument, into a logical argument, into all kinds of things that I don't believe God ever intended it to be. Giving birth in America, there's all kinds of medical politics as well as legal issues. People worry about getting sued and so forth. And part of the end result of this is that any woman, whether she wants to be pregnant or not, finds herself in a place of disempowerment from the beginning of pregnancy on. Wow. Where are the feminists here? They need to be helping us. We need to be helping us. So this is part of the reason why she may be willing to destroy part of herself in order to get out of her trap, is because she feels so disempowered, disrespected, alone, etc., from the beginning of the whole thing. So I would add that this can begin even in our childhoods, the way we're taught about our bodies, about this whole experience of being a woman, of being pregnant, of being mothers, and so on and so forth. So she's preloaded with all this negativity even before she becomes pregnant, making our jobs that much more difficult, I think. I wanted to share with you this picture of my friend's brain. She had a tumor, you can see right here, large tumor. Fortunately, it was malignant, but it was encapsulated. They took it out years ago, and she's fine. So it wasn't the worst kind of brain cancer. So here you see her brain before the surgery and after the surgery. And what do you notice about after the surgery? She's missing some. I feel like that without surgery, but so what do you think happened to her? She had to relearn. When she woke up, she could understand what was being said to her, and she couldn't speak. She was able to communicate in other words, in other ways, enough so that everybody knew she understood what was happening. She just couldn't speak. It did not take long, though. The brain is an amazing organ. It's just amazing. It was less than 10 days before she was speaking again. My friend, as I do, makes a living doing public speaking. And she was back to teaching and speaking again by the end of that year. Because the brain not only will regenerate new cells, but other areas of the brain will step in and compensate for that part of the brain that's missing. we are fearfully and wonderfully made. All these years of teaching about it, and I still am astounded by what God creates. But I want to talk about the client brain. Client brains are usually overwhelmed by fear. Now, when I talked about budgets a few minutes ago and marital discord or board discord, understand that most of our clients have some level of fear walking through our doors. They may simply be afraid of us. I'll never forget a time I had a 12-year-old client come in, and she thought we were going to put needles in her and do all kinds of awful things to her. So she was afraid of us even more than she was afraid of the whole pregnancy thing. Partly because she was 12 and her brain could only look at the immediate. And the immediate was we looked scary. But your client may be fearful about losing a boyfriend. She may be fearful about finishing medical school. She may be fearful about all kinds of things that are beyond our ability to get to in an hour. Okay? But when we are fearful, as I said earlier with the budget, when we are fearful, we don't think as well. So I think when you consider your client, you should maybe think about the fact that she's always missing a part of her brain. Now I'm going to say something you may not like. You probably are too. Especially those of you who are new, or when you have a really difficult, painful client, or you have a client that seems threatening to your own well-being somehow, your natural, God-given response is going to be a little bit of fear. So, you could go to a therapist and pay $100 for this, but I'm going to give it to you for free. There is an easy, free, risk-free thing that you can do to help her and you. And by the way, this will work in all of your life if you feel anxious, if you can't sleep, etc. The research is behind this, and I use it myself, so I can testify that it works. So I want everybody to put your hand on your chest. When you just do that, you release some oxytocin. And oxytocin will help bond you to whoever you're with, and it will also calm you. So have you ever noticed that when you talk to somebody and they say, oh, my brother just died in a car crash, many people say, oh, you're calming yourself when you put your hand on your chest. It's instinctive. Okay, so everybody get your hands back. Now close your eyes. We're going to do this together. Five times. In through your nose, out through your mouth. Good childbirth breathing. Hold it. Any of you notice anything about your bodies or your minds? You're nodding. What do you notice? You. Peace and relaxation. Okay, this is kind of what they do in yoga. Certainly what we do in childbirth, in labor. Yes?
When I'm counseling clients about smoking, I tell them they were on the right track because cycles of deep breathing are calming, but it's like deep breathing gone wrong.
Yes. Yes. That's excellent. Cycles of deep breathing are calming, but with smoking, it's like deep breathing going wrong. By the way, if you watch yourself, you will probably notice that when you're upset about something, you breathe very shallowly and you do a lot of holding your breath. I have a client I'm working with right now in my private practice for anger management, and I know when he's starting to get angry because he stops breathing. I mean, he doesn't completely stop, but I see these little tiny bursts of inhalation instead of normal breathing. So if you notice that your client is upset, you can say to her, you know, this looks really hard for you. I'd like to teach you something really easy that will help calm you as you walk through this difficult time. And you can do this 10 times a day. You can do it when you're trying to go to sleep at night. You can do it when you are getting ready to tell your boyfriend, you can, et cetera. So if you don't get anything else today, I hope that that will be helpful for you. Is this the one I was drinking out of? Must be. okay, so any questions or comments so far? I really prefer discussion, but this room is too deep to have. Yeah, it's way in the back, and you'll have to yell because I'm deaf. Okay. The right brain is more positive emotion. Of all the things we listed, to me, that's the most of the false dichotomy. It's kind of complicated. The amygdala is an area of the brain on the right side that moderates fear and anger, and that's the thing that lights up when somebody assaults you or threatens to assault you. It takes over. That's what lights up when you're having that budget discussion or when you think your boyfriend's going to break up with you because you're pregnant or so on and so forth. Positive emotions are more indwelt in the right brain, but they're also whole brain experiences. The thing is, when anger or fear are present and when that amygdala is lit up, everything else can be there, but it takes a back seat. So, again, that's part of the reason we want to re-engage her natural inclination to love this baby. Did I answer the question you were asking?
Yes, the amygdala
takes over. And you are powerless to stop it, by the way. It happens. What you can do is keep it from continuing by doing the breathing, by praying, by having good anger management skills. Yes.
My question is about a male
Is it equal in male and female? I'm from California. We're not allowed to talk about males and females anymore. However, in my experience, men's amygdalas light up a little more quickly, especially in marital conflict. And that's really important for us to understand, those of us who are women. I'm sorry, the amygdala is pretty deep in the middle of the brain, but it's more, it is a right brain thing, but emotions are pretty much in both sides. Okay, so I hope that all of you have taken our training, Serving with Care and Integrity. If you have not, some of this won't make as much sense to you in this session today. If you have not, please consider having one of us come and do a training for your center. My consistent experience of doing this for 22 years is that God shows up, and you not only learn a lot of stuff in your left brain, but you have these amazing experiences with each other and with the Lord in your right brain. But when we look at the helping skills that are taught in Serving with Care and Integrity, which ones are left and which are right? What, name some left ones you see up there. Okay, good questions. Facts, active listening is very left brain, even though you as the helper are also engaging your right brain, trying to have some God-given intuition about what is going on with her. Okay, so active listening, left brain. What about interpretive? That's almost all right brain. Now we're going to explore her feelings. So this is where we want to also be thinking about analogies and metaphors and perhaps engaging role plays about how she can use her fear as she talks to her parents. Good questions are mostly left brain, but with our questions, this is a great time. This, I think, is one of the places we're missing the boat. This is a great time to engage the right brain. One of the things I like to ask clients is, how would you feel about this baby if your situation were different? If you weren't worried about your boyfriend's reaction, how do you think you might feel about the baby? And you may have to bring her back to it a couple of times. Well, I can't think about that. I'm so worried about my boyfriend. I know. And we will talk about that. Right now, though, could you close your eyes and imagine how you're feeling about this baby? Because you are feeling something. And most of them have never stopped for even a millisecond to think about how they feel about the baby. So that's a question. We want her to think about something, but we're engaging a right brain thing. The other thing I like to do is I'll say, 5 years from now, things with your boyfriend will be resolved. Either you'll break up or you'll be permanent or something, but you won't be in this state of worry and anxiety about him. And 5 years from now, you may be braiding your daughter's hair, getting her ready for her first day of kindergarten. Or 5 years from now, you may be feeling some sadness that she's not with you. Okay, so you're taking the left brain and moving it and adding the right. Does that make sense? Okay, so good questions can be both and. Constructive feedback. If you remember your manual, this is when you say, I feel when you because. So is that left or right?
Right.
It's both. It's both. I feel, that's a right experience. When you, now I'm analyzing her behaviors, her perceptions, her what she said to me. Because, again, left. But I start with my right. And part of the reason it's an effective way of feeding back to her is because you're starting with the right. By the way, I can't remember if this was on my slides or not, but when you are engaging in eye contact with her, which eye do you think you should focus on the most? her left because it engages her emotional centers more quickly. You can bond faster. Okay? And that's true with everybody. So when you meet somebody at CareNet conference, look them in the left eye and say, I'm so glad to meet you. I'm so glad to meet you. Okay, and confrontation, left or right? This may be more left because this is where you say, you know, earlier you said to me that you are hoping that after your abortion, life will just get back to normal. I'm wondering if you thought about the fact that after your abortion, you will have had a new experience that might not be all that positive. So you might start with something left brain. Of course, you would then move to right brain. How do you think you might feel with the loss of your child, et cetera, et cetera? Perhaps there's more information that I could share with you. What do you know about abortion? That's very left side. Okay, and then relational teaching, just pictures of relationship here. The top one is five generations where we hand down parenting things. We hand down gender things. We hand down sexual things. We hand down all kinds of abilities and deficits through the generations, whether we intend to or not. You have given your children gifts. Some of them are lovely gifts, and some of them should have been thrown away a long time ago. And most of the time, you weren't thinking about it. You weren't trying to do it. It just is. And then the bottom picture is just a group of mothers who are sharing together and talking together and helping. So when we are doing our counseling in the counseling room, this is not counseling like a therapist would do where we charge them a lot of money to say, and your mother. I don't really do that, but that's what people think we do. So you're not going to be exploring her whole history and all of her relationships or anything like that. Your counseling is going to be focused on the decision at hand or next steps or whatever it happens to be. So we can best engage that whole brain just by loving her. Oh, I did have a slide on this. Okay, left eye connection, very important. How many of you have biological children? Okay, what three things do you remember being taught about how bonding happens? What do you have to do to facilitate? Touch is one. Skin to skin, so that's touch. Eye contact, so we've already talked about that. What's the third one? Focused attention, which often nursing facilitates it the best because the baby sees best 10 to 12 inches away. Guess how far it is. And you have to touch and you have to attend to that baby just because of the proximity and what's happening and so on and so forth. So these principles continue to be principles of bonding throughout our lives, whether we're thinking about them or not. Every time you hug somebody, you release oxytocin. That's why women are huggers, because we're oxytocin junkies. We can't wait to get our next fix. But even touching, like shaking hands, and of course in the counseling with our clients, we always ask permission, always, before we touch them. But sitting next to her, having our arm around her, on her knee while we pray, whatever, with her permission, facilitates that. We've already got focused attention, and hopefully you've got good eye contact while you are meeting with her. One of the reasons, for those of you who are nurses, one of the reasons that you have such opportunity is because as you do your job, you have to do all these things at the most vulnerable moments of her life. Those of us who have had babies, if we had fairly good experiences with our birth, I feel profound affection for my birth attendants. The nurse that took care of me postpartum 40 years ago is still on my mind because of all the oxytocin that's happening, all the touch, all the attention, and everything else. So we can use those ways of bonding with her, and it can be very, very helpful. So make sure that you're aware of what your body is doing and how you're engaging both of your brains. This is not just about her brain. This is maybe even more about your brain and what you're willing to engage and turn on in order to be a good helper for her. So I just talked about maternal receptivity, all those hormones that are going on and so forth. The other thing that's happening is with the beginning of the pregnancy, before she knew she was pregnant, her brain has started to change. How does that happen? Hormones. You know, we've got a lot of jokes about hormones, and I am experiencing a hot flash as we speak. And I am here to tell you hormones are not funny. We have a lot of jokes about hormones, but they are extremely powerful chemicals, and they change how your brain works or doesn't work. And what would you guess is the brain's primary change with the advent of a pregnancy? What do you remember happening as your pregnancies progressed, if you have children? You cry more easily. You're more emotionally sensitive, aren't you? What do you suppose the purpose of that is? Bonding to whom? I think it's to the baby, but also I hope you all heard Roland this morning. I think it's also to the significant people in your life who will then become the significant people in your baby's life. So husband first, theoretically, and then beyond that, grandparents and aunts and uncles and people who will be important to that baby become more important to you, and you become more easily offended because of that sometimes. Okay, what else? What else is changing in your brain as a result of pregnancy? Not finding out that you're pregnant, but the biological changes of pregnancy. Pregnancy brain, and what does that mean? Confusion, you're not quite as good cognitively, are you? It's harder to make decisions. Actually, guess what the research has shown? The research has mostly been on the postpartum brain, and a lot of us joke that when you deliver the placenta, your brain goes with it. What they have discovered through rat studies is that she actually is more cognitively advanced. However, the focus is all on the pups. So one of the primary things that happens when a woman becomes pregnant is that her brain starts to focus on herself to care for the baby. Because if she doesn't take care of herself, obviously she can't take care of the baby. And if you remember from your pregnancies, you become more and more withdrawn and kind of turned inward by the end of the pregnancy, and heaven help the person who disrupts a laboring woman who's trying to put all of her energy and then some on getting this baby born in a healthy way. And the same is true postpartum. As long as the baby is safe, all that oxytocin every time you nurse that baby, most women, you could set bombs off around them and they're fine as long as they're able to be safe with their baby being safe. However, if there's anything that looks threatening to the baby in the mother's perception, she will be very cognitively able to deal with that for her baby, but she won't be able to deal with other things. That's where we see what we refer to as the pregnancy brain. So understand that the client is legitimately more self-centered than she might be at other times. And the reason she's thinking of an abortion is because she feels a threat to herself and to her baby somehow. She likely doesn't recognize it, because I'm seeing a lot of looks on your faces like this is new information. So you've been pregnant and didn't recognize it. She's not aware of all of this. And yet, that is what's happening in her brain. So all the more reason, as far as I'm concerned, to engage both sides of the brain. We need to give her information that is cognitively helpful to her. She's got to have education on pregnancy, fetal development, abortion procedure and risk, all of those things. But it will be lost to her if we can't present it in a way that also engages the right side of the brain. I wanted to leave a few minutes for questions. So what questions or comments? You feel free to argue with me, throw things at me, whatever. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Even in the counseling room, and they're not comfortable with enough to, you know, say, let's take a breath together. What do you find is the easiest way to kind of bring down
Okay. that fight or flight? Okay, if you see fight or flight going on and you, for some reason, aren't comfortable to help her to breathe with you, how can you help bring those emotions down? First of all, I think it would be a very rare event when she wouldn't be willing to breathe with you. You need to model it, though. If you sit there and say, okay, you're obviously upset, take a deep breath. First of all, that's patronizing, but secondly, it won't be helpful to her. But if you just say, boy, this looks like a hard thing for you, I know a way that we can both be calm while we talk about this. Let's try this. But failing that, one thing is your volume and tone of voice. One of the things that happens in a group emergency is one person starts to panic and it's contagious. So if she says, oh, I've got to have an abortion, my boyfriend's going to leave, and you say, oh, you can't do that! Okay, you've just way raised it. But if you smile at her, and obviously not, oh, you're having an abortion, but you smile and say, oh, this sounds like a hard situation. You lower your tone, you slow down, allow for the space of silence, because often that's when she will hear from God, whether she knows his voice or not. And certainly that's when we'll hear from God. So doing those things, if you have permission to touch her, just somebody else's touch will be helpful. If you have permission to pray with her, if she's spinning out, you could say, you know, this would be a really great time for us to ask God's help in the situation. So there are many ways. any of those can be helpful. Drink of water. It used to amuse me. I like to watch crime drama. Don't ask me why. I love Criminal Minds because they're getting inside of these weird minds. In an emergency, the helpers almost always offer water. But one of the things that drinking water does, one of the things that any physical movement will do, is kind of break the moment of the panic a little bit. And the water itself, of course, is helpful. So offering a drink of water, saying, you know, we can take this really slowly. Let's just sit for a minute, and then we can talk. So there are many ways that you can try. Whatever calms you will probably calm her. Okay? Or you can ask her. You know, you appear to be really, really stressed about this. What can you think of that we could do right now that might be helpful to you? Yes, in the back.
Yes.
Yes. Hang on. Okay, she's talking about the book Your Brain on Joy and how the pathways for anxiety and fear are incompatible with gratitude and joy. So it's pretty much impossible to be anxious and thankful at the same time. Absolutely. Okay, so the first question is how... I already lost it. How can we employ gratitude? This is one of the things counselors do all the time. We ask people to make a list of things you're thankful for. If they're believers, I love to have people make a list of times God has met them, things that God has given them, things that they're thankful for. But if they're not believers, what has gone well in your life? You're worried about your boyfriend leaving. Tell me what's good in your relationship. Help her to engage thankfulness, whether she knows she's engaging thankfulness or not. She doesn't have to know that she is. so many ways to go about that as well. Now, what was the second one? Using the hand on the chest. Well, again, you can use that anytime, but you could just say to her, hey, let's try an experiment. Why don't you put your hand on your chest? Close your eyes, take a deep breath, hold it, let it out. Now with your eyes closed, imagine this baby growing in your belly. And imagine how you think you might feel about him or her right now. Okay? Easy to do. Easy to do. But one of the things, if she's terrified about her boyfriend, you have to promise her that you're going to come back to that. You're not ignoring her fears. You're not dismissing it. But you want to engage the maternal heart first. Okay, there was a hand. Yes. Yes. I recommend a program that would, or a book. I've gleaned all this stuff from here, there, and everywhere. You can certainly get the session from here, and if you send me an email, I'm happy to send you the PowerPoint. Linda? Okay. I thought you were going to add something. Thank you. My email is AAAS, as in Susie, GRAM. Andrew, Ashley, and Alyssa's grandma. That's when I only had three. So AAASGRAM@AOL.com. If I send it to you, I'm probably going to have to take the pictures out because I don't have permission to use the pictures for my talks. Some of them I can leave in, but I am happy to send it. Or bring one of us to do your trainings. We'd love to come. Yes. Okay, hang on. Let me say this. Go to vitae.org, vitaefoundation.org, and they do research on this. You have a booth here, don't you? Okay. For those of you who are here, it's in the bag. For those on tape, you can go online and learn a lot more about the right brain and pregnancy decisions and so on and so forth. We are out of time. Thank you so much for being here and sharing your thoughts as we've talked together and for the work you do. Please don't forget your evaluations. You need to hand them to Linda on the way out, and let's pray. Father, we do thank you for the amazing privilege of coming alongside men and women who are experiencing pregnancy questions and concerns and fears and anxieties. And Father, I just would ask that by your Holy Spirit that you would help us to be effective helpers, that you would through us love these clients and help them to not only be able to choose life, but to come to know the giver of life. And we thank you for all of this. Thank you for these wonderful servants. And I pray blessing upon them in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you all.